On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Friday, October 24th, 2025. Now, today is one of my favorite days of the year. It is the first game of the Fall Classic. The World Series starts in just about an hour now, but before I get to see that, before we all get to enjoy that, before we get to the weekend, we still got a bit of work to do because October is almost done. Overnight temperatures may be getting chilly. Snow might start to soon fall. And we are quickly moving through the fourth quarter, onward to the holidays, and before you know it, into 2026. And we've seen it countless times this year, how quickly things can change, which means no matter what time of year it is, it's critical to remain focused. And so each and every day of the week, Justin and I come here with one objective: to help you become a better and more informed investor. As always, we have a mixture of educational and actionable items to go over today. But most importantly, we have your finance and investment questions. So before we get to today's market performance and run down our show topics, let's tackle a caller question now.
Hey guys, just calling to get your thoughts on Booz Allen Hamilton, ticker symbol BAH. I'll listen to your feedback on the podcast. Thanks.
Booz Allen Hamilton, ticker BAH, is a management consulting and tech engineering services firm. They've had a bit of a rough year. Year-to-date, down 28.98%, down 20% in the past 3 months, down 45% in the past 52 weeks. Now, it is a fairly large company, right? About $12.3 billion market cap. But revenue has not just stalled, revenue growth, that is, it's fallen. Going back 5 years, annualized revenue growth was about 9.9%, yet this year, revenue is supposed to drop from $11.9 billion to $11.8 billion. At the same time, net income is supposed to fall from $930 million to $802 million, in spite of 14.1% growth for most of the past 5 years. Net margins slipping from 7.8% to 6.8%. From a relative valuation perspective, it's pretty cheap near its low. About 15 times forward-looking earnings, the low over the past 5 years is 13.2. So why is this company, why is it not doing too hot? Well, Booz Allen is highly exposed to U.S. government spending. 100% of the revenue comes to the United States. 98% of its revenue comes from U.S. federal contracts. And it's been a rough time for federal contractors, even before the government shutdown. The firm itself announced workforce reductions, about 7% of its employees, because of the weaker outlook. They signaled cost-cutting across the board, specifically in its civilian agency contracts. And so in spite of its strong positioning in AI and cyber for government missions, right, they have over 200 active AI projects and 300 active cyber projects, the name of the game is growth. And so after spending about $3 billion in advanced tech innovation over the past decade, rubber's starting to meet the road. In my opinion, right now, those challenges seem to be too big to overcome. When 98% of your customer base is one customer, that is a lot of risk, and it is not a great time to have your sole revenue stream be from federal contracts. So it may look like it's a good deal. Relative strength is not very good. Price has fallen off of a cliff. Maybe it's trying to find a bottom here near its valuation lows. But what is going to drive it higher? In the short term, I don't think anything. So for now, I'd keep my hands off of Booz Allen Hamilton, ticker BH. We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we got planned. My main focus point concerns this question. Is a securities-based line of credit, also known as an SBLOC, right for you? We will explore the risks and rewards of an SBLOC, a credit line secured by your investments, in order to help you decide if it's the right financial tool for your liquidity needs. Also, given that we're not getting a lot of data from the government, we have to grasp onto anything. So let's take a look at a deep dive of what we've seen out of earnings, how it's reassured markets, and other state-level data, how that's played into this wasteland, this desert of federal data. We'll also touch on inflation edged up a little bit higher, but less than expected. Likely, Fed is headed for another rate cut. We'll dive into the ramifications of that. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on how the Fed is really putting a big win column on the board for banks as they vote to advance a stress test overhaul. What does that mean for markets? What does that mean for credit? What does that mean for you? We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on the concept of staying in the market and another on Newmont Corporation, as well as maybe some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And hopefully, before we head off for the weekend, some live calls from you all. Now, I think it's probably safe to say we'll be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do, I recommend that you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. Guess what? It's a free read and it's posted now at investtalk.com. As we move into a break, my phone lines are open, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART. Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
As always, before we dive deeper into some finance and investment questions, let's talk a little bit about the market. U.S. stocks higher overall in Friday trading, ending a bit off of their best levels. But guess what? Major indices all posted solid weekly gains for the week. The Dow up 1.01%, S&P 500 up 79 basis points, NASDAQ up 1.15, Russell 2000 up 1.24. So on a sector basis, big tech mostly higher. Google on the back of a deal with Anthropic, the best performer from that segment. Other outperformers included semis, banks, investment banks, credit cards, tech, hardware, and utilities. Relative underperformers included energy, multis, athletic apparel, and dollar stores. On the bond side, not really that big of a move in spite of some cooler than expected inflation data. Treasuries unchanged to a bit firmer on the short end. The two-year yield down about one basis point on the day, while the dollar index, well, that finished flat. Gold, however, retraced a little bit, finished down 20 basis points after a 2% bounce on Thursday. And crude oil settling down on the day, down 50 basis points, still posting a solid weekly performance. Actually, its best weekly performance since June. But this is in spite of news of Russian oil sanctions. Overall, what really tabbed a lot of this to the upside? Well, I mean, we did get the latest batch of economic data, did add a bit of support to the narrative that has really been going on, which is there is a bit of a solid macro backdrop, right? CPI cooler than expected. Flash PMIs and services PMIs, both stronger than expected. But you know, in spite of this, not really a big move in the treasury market that you'd expect. The market's still pricing in 42 basis points of cuts through year end, a little changed from prior reports. And overall Q3 earnings metrics, well, remaining a bit elevated. The blended growth rate already up 1% since the start of the earnings season, and the beat rate running at nearly 84%. Also a bit of positive sentiment surrounding trade. The U.S. confirmed that Trump and Xi's meeting next week is on, with potentially some semblance, albeit not much, of de-escalation expected. At the same time, the market ignored the president's announcement he is terminating negotiations with Canada. On the data front, September core CPI of 20 basis points, a bit below consensus, which was 30, while annualized core of 3%, also below the 3.1 consensus. Employment readings mixed, with services up and manufacturing down. We also got the final October Michigan consumer sentiment, marked down 1.4 points from the preliminary read of 53.6, the weakest level since May. We also got the one-year inflation expectations unchanged at 4.6, though the longer term, the 5 to 10 year, marked up 20 basis points to 3.9%, the highest level we've seen since June. No Fed speak this week, this upcoming week, ahead of the 29th of October FOMC decision, where the Fed is widely expected to cut rates again by 25 basis points. Also, maybe something we'd be looking for is the expectation for signaling an end for QE. Other than that, with the government closed, not much in terms of data releases. So we will see what the market has to bring next week. Now, it is Friday. I've said it a couple times, and I briefly want to mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, because it will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, we touched on an important topic. We mentioned it on the show the other day. That is the wealth effect. And with the wealth effect very apparent, what does that mean for growth? What does that mean for inflation? What does that mean for the economic environment? Stock Ideas section, we mentioned a leading provider of identity and access management solutions, as well as a provider of support services for hospitals, senior care facilities, and healthcare organizations. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on AI's next phase, profits over promises. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com and subscribe to the newsletter. The newsletter will hit your inbox on Saturday afternoons. All right, let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier.
I had a question for you guys about the concept of staying in the market. You know, anytime you take profits on stock or mutual fund, or maybe you roll over an IRA or a 401k into an IRA where funds are traded from one mutual fund to another, you go to cash for a minute, and then you are reinvested back in the market. It's like every time you do that, you're just getting back into the market again. So I was wondering if you could touch on that, your philosophy and your ideas of staying in the market and what that means.
That's a great question. And I think it's open to interpretation, really. I know that a lot of the big fund companies, right, want to maintain pretty high exposure to the equity market, whatever asset class they are chasing. So if you are a small cap fund and you get big applications, you have a lot of money, we're not just going to hold that in cash. You're not just going to hold that in a overnight money market sweep. You're probably going to equitize it with futures that are linked towards the asset class that you have, maintaining that exposure over time. Now, for individual investors, I think you have a little bit different concerns, right? What is a fund's primary concern? Tracking your relative to its benchmark. As an investor, again, a little different. I think of staying in the market as a mindset. It doesn't mean that at all times you are 100% in the market. You can be 0% in cash. You can be 20% in cash. But your mindset is such that you are always looking for opportunities to reinvest that money. What is not in the market? Selling out of everything and keeping it in a money market fund. That's certainly not in the market. Now, there are vehicles that you can use to maintain that 100% exposure. You could buy some sort of derivative of the S&P 500 or the Russell 3000 or any sort of broad market index to keep your cash in instead of keeping it in a money market fund. But I don't think that is necessary for the everyday investor. Yes, it is going to happen that there will be lags. between when you trim and when you reinvest. But if your mindset is such that you're always trying to find ways to stay exposed to the stock market to get those benefits of long-term compounding and long investment horizon returns, then I consider you somebody who's staying in the market. Moving into a break, still to come, my main focus point. A couple more stories, more answers to your questions, and hopefully some live calls. I encourage you to call now. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
My main focus point today is about a tool some people use for liquidity without having to sell down from their portfolio. And that tool is called a securities-based line of credit, or SBLOC, and it lets investors borrow against their portfolio without selling the assets. The benefit of this being, well, you're preserving long-term investment, you still get those returns, and you don't have to pay taxes. Now, this type of line of credit is ideal for high net worth clients. SBLOCs can fund opportunities like real estate purchases, like business needs, or large tax payments without triggering capital gains. Lenders typically advance 50 to 90% of portfolio value, depending on the asset type. Treasuries and cash equivalents earn higher advance rates than equities. Now, the key here, though, is assets must be non-retirement holdings. If you're getting some sort of tax advantage by the account, well, it doesn't qualify for this type of line of credit. Additionally, leveraged ETFs, illiquid positions, and penny stocks generally do not qualify. Again, the idea here is this portfolio is collateral. And if somebody's going to give you a loan, they want to know that they can actually get their money back from the assets that they could seize. Now, borrowers pledge securities to a separate custodial account monitored by the lender to ensure adequate collateralization. Unlike margin loans, though, SBLOC proceeds cannot be used to buy more securities. They're designed for external liquidity. You can't use them to create leverage on top of leverage. Now, upfront, costs are pretty minimal. There's no application, there's no origination fees, but interest varies. It's variable. It accrues daily. It's typically below credit card or unsecured loan rates because, again, there is collateral here, but it still is a cost. So what are the key advantages? Well, liquidity, flexibility, portfolio continuity, and tax efficiency, since investors avoid realizing gains, which they would have to do if they wanted to sell assets to raise cash. When would you want to use this type of vehicle? Well, bridge financing, tax management. You don't want to incur additional gains in order to pay off the taxes from your gains. Maybe income smoothing, home renovations, or other emergency liquidity. Now, it's not all safe. There are risks. The main risks include market declines, rising rates. Remember, the rates are generally variable. Because if pledged assets fall in value, you could get margin called. You could have to liquidate some holdings without any notice. So what is the tip here if you're going to access an SBLOC? Conservative borrowing. Keep utilization well below limits and pledge your most stable assets. That will reduce the risk of forced selling. For affluent investors with ample collateral and repayment capacity, an SBLOC can be a powerful, low-friction liquidity tool, but as with everything else, it requires a disciplined risk management. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question.
Calling today about your opinion on GDX. I currently own it in my 403 and 457. It's currently about 3 or 4% of my portfolio. Wondering what you think of going up to 5 or 6%, and what you think of GDX overall. All right, thank you.
GDX is the VanEck Gold Miners ETF. I think it's one of the leading gold miners funds in the ETF space. It's been around for a while, since 2013, and it originally started as U.S. gold miners, but expanded to track global gold companies. As you'd expect, having a banger of a year, up 117.61% over the past 52 weeks, or rather year to date, up 72% over the past year, up 46.76% on an annualized basis over the past 3 years. It will do as well as gold does. It has the names that you would expect it to have at the highest weights: Newmont Corporation, Barrick Mining, Anglo Ashanti. These are some of the largest names in the space. It also has a pretty diverse revenue stream. No single country makes up about 20%, or makes up more than 20% of the revenue. It's pretty well spread out on the size spectrum. 68% large caps, 30% mid caps. And its expense ratio is not crazy, 51 basis points. So the question here is this a good ETF? Yeah, I like this ETF if you're trying to get exposure to gold miners. Is now a good time to be exposed to gold? I mean, it's marched up in such a crazy way. And yeah, we had a little bit of a pullback. We had some bounce. But the reality is, the conditions that have driven gold ever higher over the past 18 months are still out there. And so 5 to 6%, I think, is a perfectly reasonable allocation to have to gold, or in this case, a gold proxy. Great question. That is the VanEck Gold Miners ETF, ticker GDX. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic: generative AI in finance, 5 ways to budget, plan, and save. Discover the 5 key personal finance use cases for generative AI, including how to use it for creating personalized budgets, setting financial goals, and simulating debt repayment scenarios. We'll talk about that on Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Jarek, calling in from Canada. You got a question about PSM. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Hi, Luke. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. I own PSM, and just looking into potentially buying a bit more, adding to my position. That's Parsons Corporation, PSN.
PSN, okay, that makes more sense than looking at this very small cap German media company, which is ticker PSM.
No.
So we'll take a look at PSN. Just give me a sec to load this up. Okie doke. Parsons Corporation, headquartered in Virginia, is a mid-cap company, about $9.4 billion. It operates via 2 major segments. It's got federal solutions, so it's defense, intelligence, and cybersecurity, and also critical infrastructure, think transportation, water, and environment. It's broken down about 59-41 between those two. About 77% of its revenue comes from the United States, 16% from the Middle East, and then the other 7 pretty much from other places within North America. The key drivers, right? The demand for cybersecurity, for cyber mission engineering, for infrastructure investment. Think about the U.S. grid and how poorly managed it currently is. But in spite of these things, it's down about 8.77% year to date, down 19.39% over the past 52 weeks. I think generally, right, they do have a bit of secular tailwinds going on. As I mentioned, the infrastructure upgrading, a lot of defense spending. But they could be suffering from what a lot of other public contractors, public solutions companies are suffering from, and that is an environment of cost-cutting. Now, they didn't look as bad in terms of its momentum as Booz Allen Hamilton did. From a technical perspective, it certainly looks far better. But my big concern here is contract timing and backlog risk. right? These government defense contracts often have very long lead times, so budget delays, shifting priorities could lead to execution risk. From a valuation perspective, it looks like it's trading at about 24.2 times price to forward-looking earnings, well above its average of about 29. And revenue growth is slowing. It's actually supposed to lose some revenue from this year to next year. $6.7 billion to $6.5 billion net income. Still supposed to grow a little bit. It means margins are expanding just slightly from 3.5% net margin to 3.8%. Now, from a debt perspective, it looks okay, about $900 million in debt. So I'm not worried about the leverage here. The one thing that does concern me is the secular headwinds. Government coming cutting back, long lead time of contracts, only muddled by what's been going on with the U.S. government shutdown. And by the way, again, the U.S. makes up 77% of its business. I'm not seeing any warning signs to get out now. I mean, over the past 6 months, momentum has been better. I just am not sure that I would throw more money into this now. I would wait to see. We're getting earnings November 5th. Wait to see what guidance is. Wait to see the reaction to guidance. And only then would I consider throwing more money in. That is Parsons Corporation, ticker PSN. Thanks for the call. Let's make it two in a row. Tackle this question now.
Hi, Luke and Justin. Today, I wanted you guys to look at Newmont, ticker's NEM. They had earnings, and then after hours, they were down a few percentage points. It looks like earnings were good, but there was some guidance on maybe cash flows not being as strong as the previous quarter and potentially going to be worse next quarter, and that's all in the midst of, you know, really high gold prices. You know, I bought it around 50. You know, I'm up pretty good now. Would you use this time to maybe trim a little bit? I'm not overweight gold, so as far as my allocation, but would you sell? Would you, you know, switch this to a different type of gold or precious metal exposure? What do you guys think about Newmont? I'll listen on the show. Thank you.
Newmont Corporation, very large company, $98 billion market cap company, is a miner. So they have gold properties, they got copper, silver, lead. About 15% of their revenue comes from the United States, 16% from Australia, 14% from Canada, 44% from elsewhere. But a big 13% comes from the Nevada gold mines. Now, Newmont has been a big beneficiary of the rise of gold, up 123.99% year to date, up 69.28% over the past 52 weeks. In spite of that, down 6.23% today. Now, earnings are fine, right? They did advise of some sort of cash flow issues. Debt isn't really a problem, though it has been increasing over the past 5 years, only sitting at about $8 billion, certainly well covered by, or at least half covered by the cash and short-term investments. They're sitting on $3.6 billion in cash. What Newmont does and what a lot of miners do is they offer leverage into the gold price cycle. When gold prices rise, large producers can benefit through margin expansion and higher free cash flow. You're seeing that. Free cash flow up from $2.9 billion to $6 billion. Net operating cash flow up from $6.3 billion to $8.9 billion. Net margin up from 17.7% to 33.4%. But this is cyclical, and it is leveraged exposure. I think gold, as I said in the question about the VanEck Gold Miners ETF, is a great position to have within your portfolio. But there's a bit of a market signal here after earnings. You are up a lot. I wouldn't sell completely out of it. Maybe start trim to take profit, diversify into other miners, just so you're not concentrated on their specific properties. Still like the name. We have held it for clients. Wouldn't sell out of all of it. That is Newmont Corporation, ticker NEM. On Fridays, we like to run down, if we can, a couple key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year treasury yield was at 3.484% today. Last week, that number was 3.464, 199 weeks ago, 64 basis points. The 10-year yield was at 4.003% today. Last week, that number was 4.011, and 197 weeks ago, it was 1.762. Gold, $4,113 per ounce, a $136 decrease compared to last week. But guess what? 12 weeks ago, that number was $3,348. And 191 weeks ago, which feels like decades ago, that number was $1,806. Silver today priced at $4,860 per ounce, a 3.91 increase, $3.91 increase compared with 2 weeks ago. Sorry, that's a decrease compared with 2 weeks ago, where the number was $51.91. 89 weeks back, it was $22.80, and looking back 183 weeks, silver was $23.94. Oil, $61.50 per barrel, $3.76 higher compared with last week. 57 weeks ago, number was $67.79. 99 weeks back, that number was $74.30. 198 weeks ago, the number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.06, a 1 cent increase compared with 1 week ago. 125 weeks ago, that number was $3.56, and 173 weeks back, that number was $4.25. California gas, $4.59 per gallon, a 5 cent decline compared with just last week. 103 weeks ago, that number was $5.32, and 179 weeks back, that number was $5.87. For comparison, in the Sunshine State, Florida, gas is it the Sunshine State? Jorge, can you check me on that? Is Florida the Sunshine State? Florida is the Sunshine State. Didn't want to ascribe that to the wrong state. Anyway, gas is averaging $2.94 per gallon today. That is a $1.65 less than gas in California. Double confirmed. Florida, the Sunshine State. All right, let's move things along. And as I mentioned, government's closed. There are a lot of ramifications of that, certainly more of which will be felt in November when money does actually run out for a lot of critical programs. But it also means we don't get a lot of data. And so the market's grasping. We're grabbing for anything that tells us anything about anything. And one of the things that has steadied jittery markets is strong corporate earnings. They've offset a lot of investor anxiety over credit scares, the shutdown, tensions with China, now tensions with Canada. And it's kind of across the board. Coca-Cola was positive. 3M was positive. General Motors was positive, all exceeding Wall Street's expectations. Intel, upbeat results. 86% of the S&P 500 have beaten analysts' estimates. And so we've seen a bit of a positive week in spite of not getting a lot of data that we are used to. For better or for worse, in a way, earnings have become kind of the de facto economic barometer. They're filling the gap left by suspended government releases on jobs and inflation and being something that you can ascribe a direction to. The rally this week further fueled by broader companies, Dow Inc., Las Vegas Sands, all doing strong in earnings. Outside of earnings, more optimism. Housing data added a bit of optimism. September home sales hit a 7-month high as buyers started to take advantage a bit of falling mortgage rates. When you don't have federal data, what can we do? Well, we look at state-level jobs data. And at least on a state level, we're not seeing any surge in layoffs. It's easing fears of a slowdown, even without that aggregated federal reporting. But in spite of all this, there's still a bit of jitters in the credit markets after the bankruptcies of First Brands and Tricolor. Are they idiosyncratic? Are they business specific? Are they systemic? Only time will tell. But still, looking deeper into financials, bank stocks stabilizing a bit. Regional lenders are rebounding. Now, on the bond side, right, one of the ways you can take a look at how the market is interpreting all of these layers of risk is bond spreads. High-yield bond spreads have widened just slightly to about 3.04 percentage points, but that still remains near historic lows, suggesting markets aren't really pricing in major credit stress. One strategist put it this way: the current market feels like a casino where the craps table is closed, so everyone moves to blackjack. Investors are adapting. They're focusing more and more on different data points. Just because we can't see one thing doesn't mean you can't focus in and try and decipher the signal from the noise. Looks like we got time to roll in another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
I had a question. I've invested in a stock called AMZA, or the ticker is AMZA. I had a couple questions about this. First of all, what's y'all's opinion on this stock? As well, they are structured as a C corporate stock, and I just want to know the ramifications behind taxes and other inside information on this that I don't quite understand fully. Again, the ticker is AMZA, and I was just asking about the C corporation structure, and also thumbs up or thumbs down, as Justin would say. Have a great one, y'all. Thanks.
So what I'm seeing for AMZA is the InfraCap MLP ETF. And I'm seeing that it is a actively managed ETF investing primarily in midstream energy infrastructure MLPs, trying to get total return through income distributions and capital appreciation with a modest bit of leverage, about 1.25 times leverage. Now, if you're an income-seeking investor, I think this makes some sort of sense, right? They offer one of the highest yields in the energy MLP space. And midstream MLPs can give you relatively stable cash flows, especially if contracts are long-term, they're less commodity price sensitive, can appeal during certain parts of the economic cycle. But because of its leverage, its option strategies, its focus on MLPs, there's an amplified risk return here rather than some sort of conservative income fund. I wouldn't consider it a focal point of my strategy. I wouldn't have it be a main point of my strategy because you have that commodity sector risk. You have interest rate leverage risk. You have tax complexity because of the C corporation structure and deferred tax liabilities. It's a lot more difficult to track. You could have far different exposure than you would have if you just invested in a simple ETF. Meaning maybe you want to hold it in a tax advantaged account. What's its expense ratio? I'm not seeing much in terms of expense ratio here either, so I'm not getting a lot of visibility there. But generally, I'd expect it to be on the more expensive side because of its niche, because of its concentration. Overall, I mean, I generally tend to stay away or suggest that you might want to stay away from these tax complicated, leveraged, concentrated ETFs. They can be more of a headache than what they bring into your portfolio. And so I'm going to stay in line with that. I'm going to say, if you're an income investor, there are safer, more conservative ways to get income elsewhere. If you're looking for appreciation, then this is probably not the sector concentration that you want in the first place. And if you're looking to have simple taxes, well, this is certainly not the way to go. That is AMZA, the InfraCap MLP ETF. Now recently, and we'll do another one soon, but recently we did a webinar on AI. We went beyond the traditional names that most people have been talking about and deeper into the picks and shovels, into the energy and the industrial sector to find those beneficiaries outside of those big tech names. If you missed it, well, it was a great time, but don't worry, we recorded it and it is available over there on our InvestTalk YouTube. You'll see our presentation and you'll see many of the brilliant questions from listeners such as yourselves. Head over to InvestTalk.com, or head over to YouTube actually, and search for InvestTalk with two T's. This is InvestTalk, I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Ernie, and I'm calling from Lemoore Naval Base, Central California, and I'm calling about a ticker symbol, S. QM. It's one of the largest lithium producers in the world, if not the largest. And I want to know your thoughts on it and what's a good entry point. I already have a half a position in and love the show. Keep doing what you do. Thank you.
SQM, Sociedad Química y Minera de Chile, and apologies to all Spanish speakers globally, is a large chemical company. They have major operations in specialty plant nutrition, iodine and derivatives, potassium and salt, but most notably, as the caller mentioned, lithium. Year to date, this company is up 25.28%, up 12.8% over the past 52 weeks. Size-wise, mid-cap, $12.2 billion market cap. Revenue growth pretty stellar. really into the pandemic, into 2022, right? Revenue grew from $1.9 billion to $10.7 billion. Now, after that, it's fallen quite a bit. It's been a pretty poor time for the lithium cycle. But in spite of all of this, right, year to date, this company's up. Now, going back to 2022, they're at a high of about 104. It's been a slow downward climb ever since then to about 45, 55 per share. They actually lost money in 2024, projected to make money in 2025. Net margin set to be 14.6%. Net income about $656 million. They're trading at the average over the past 5 years. Price to forward-looking earnings, 15.2 times. You know, I think that you really nailed it, right? This is going to be about lithium. Now, the company has initiated a bit of workforce reductions with the lithium market slump. They've started to cost cut and rescale a little bit better. They do have some pretty solid long-term supply deals with automakers like Hyundai and Kia, and help to, you know, for those lithium hydroxide EV batteries. And that's reinforced its position in battery metals. But this is going to be exactly predicated upon the lithium cycle. And so if you want to hold lithium, and this is a good name to hold, if you want to be exposed to lithium, it's only got about $3.6 billion in debt. Its growth has been solid outside of cyclically where lithium has been. Just understand that I wouldn't want to be too exposed to this commodity in particular. So maybe start to rethink what a full position means to you, especially as there may be some cutbacks on companies investing in EVs, the demand for lithium, and the cycle may not turn as soon as we'd like it to. Either way, it's a solid company. I would just rethink how much exposure you might want. That is SQM. Thanks for the call. Now, quickly, let's go over the numbers we got today. Inflation picked up slightly in September, rising at 3% year over year, a notch above August 2.9%, but below that expectations of 3.1%. Core inflation, excluding food and energy, came in at 3%, matching the headline rate and signaling that price pressures remain broad but contained. The report gives the Fed a pretty clear path to another rate cut. But tariff-related costs are still creeping into categories. You saw it in apparel and furniture and sporting goods. For now, firms are finding ways to absorb, or avoid the higher levies, but that can only last for so long. The U.S. has collected $30 billion in tariff revenue in September, yet overall consumer prices showed only mild upward pressure. Elsewhere, though, energy prices rose sharply, led by gasoline, while food costs climbed more slowly, helping to offset higher prices elsewhere. Housing costs, a key driver of core inflation, rose modestly, helped by soft rents. And economists say that the report underscores a shift in Fed focus from that inflation towards that employment as hiring slows and the low-fire job market weakens. Market rallied on the news, betting the Fed will cut rates again next week, as inflation pressures, although ever present, seeming to cool just enough to keep the easing cycle alive. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which you and they can get at iTunes and Spotify. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. And check out our YouTube exclusive content on our YouTube channel. Just search Invest Talk with 2 T's. As always, if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirements, and whether it's all really working together, let's chat. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring clarity and confidence to your investing lives. As with everything else, it all starts at investtalk.com. Just click the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line
at 888-99-CHART.